Don't you always want to be the best you can be?
The Frankie Boyer Show.
What is this?
It's more than a lifestyle show.
It's a show about living in today's world.
I think something is happening.
Frankie enthusiastically brings an amazing eclectic mix to the airwaves.
You got that right.
One of the reasons she's earned legions of loyal fans is very simple. When you listen to the Frankie Boyer Show, you just never know what's going to happen next.
So listen for yourself.
Here is Frankie Boyer.
And welcome. It is so nice to have you with us right here on Biz Talk Radio, our regular Biz Roundup segment today with Mark Goldman, partner at Goldman McCormick PR, which is a bi-coastal-based public relations agency specializing in traditional media placement for law, finance, health, business, authors, and more. And Mark, it's always a pleasure. So I love our stories today, and we have a devoted segment. We're going to be doing two segments, so we have time to finally get through some of them. But can we start with Amazon, please? Because I just wonder what's going on with them. Why do they want to get into the grocery business?
It's more of the brick and mortar business. If you've seen, I'm not sure if they have it in Boston, but in New York City, they have actual Amazon retail bookstores. Have you seen those anywhere?
No, we don't have them here yet.
They have them all over New York City. Kind of interesting and fun. They have coffee shops in them again, and fun places to hang out to, and also great places for business meetings. Anyway, Amazon plans to open dozens of grocery stores, according to the Wall Street Journal report that came out this morning. Citing various sources, the Wall Street Journal says Amazon is in talks to expand the company's grocery footprint beyond the Whole Foods market chain, which they acquired, you know, of course, in 2017. New chain, which will have separate branding from Whole Foods, has plans to open up in L.A., Los Angeles, California, of course, really at the end of 2019. The internet chain as well is also talking to open up locations in San Francisco, California, Seattle, Chicago, D.C. and Philly, according to the Wall Street Journal report. I find this fascinating. I love when brick-and-mortar stores are opening and not closing because of Amazon.
Well, I'm still not sure I understand what they want to do, but I'm one of those customers that's not real thrilled that they took over Whole Foods. I find the subtle changes.
Is there a major difference?
Yeah, I find it's subtle, but it's a big difference for me as someone who used to frequent Whole Foods much more than I do today. And yet,
do you find it interesting that
because
of online sales, a majority of a lot of stores are closing in this country? Just the other day, Payless announced, Payless Shoes announced that they're closing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
the online retailers.
And you have another story coming.
Amazon's just really to open up. You know, they're just looking to open up brick and mortar stores. It's kind of interesting.
Right. And you have another story coming up about more retailers closing. Yeah, I think it is. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. I just find, and I have to tell you, I'm not an Amazon boycott person. I love getting there's a particular coffee alternative called Dandelion Blend, and I can't have caffeine or the beans.
Right.
And I love this product. And the only place that I can really get it that's, you know, fairly decent, affordable price is Amazon. And I have
I'm a big fan of Amazon, too. It's sad how a lot of our brick-and-mortar stores in this country are closing. It's horrible.
It is. And I tried really hard at the beginning to find stores. And I still do. I try really hard to go to a store before I click on one click. But they do make it. They make
it
so easy.
Don't you like trying on things still?
Yeah, I do. But they make it so easy, Mark. I mean, I actually got a T-shirt. It's not the right color, but I'm going to keep it because it's real comfortable for $13 and change with free shipping. So I got a cute little T-shirt for this spring and summer that, you know, it's really adorable. I read a couple of reviews about it, and I purchased it thinking it was a color that would go with a little jacket I have. But bottom line is that, yeah, I like the convenience. I like that it's my go-to.
Right.
I have mixed feelings.
Back to the Amazon grocery story. do you guys? I know on Long Island in New York, we have Walmart grocery stores. That Walmart has these own supermarkets, and they've only opened up supermarkets. They only sell, you know, fruits and vegetables, that kind of thing. They have anything like that near you?
No.
Yeah.
No.
So I forgot what it's called. It's like, you know, the Walmart Market or whatever it is. And they're pretty successful. And I'm assuming Amazon's going to go after them and the rest of the business.
So interesting to see what Bezos, what he has up his sleeve for the future.
Absolutely.
I can tell you that
tremendous.
You New Yorkers had mixed feelings about his going into the city. So that's going to be. No.
Not at all. I'm disgusted with our politicians here in New York. I really think that Amazon should reconsider coming to Queens, New York. And, you know, I think a lot of people didn't realize about the ripple effect and how it would affect other people. So.
Yes. Yeah, you're probably right. Hey, there's a new war going on, and I think it's going to be so exciting to see how it plays out. But so are you an Uber or a Lyft or neither?
I am a Lyft guy personally.
You are. Okay. And I'm an Uber gal.
Wow. Yeah.
So.
You know what? I try to compare the prices, but for whatever reason, I just stay with Lyft for the most part.
You do. Now, is the difference that you pay cash or a separate tip with Lyft? Is that how it works? I don't know anything about Lyft.
You know what? You can always pay cash on Uber or Lyft as far as tip goes. But, usually a tip is part of the Lyft experience. You know, you could tip after the fact. However, that's about the only service I don't tip for because they get 75% of the ride.
Oh, they do Lyft?
Yes.
Lyft gets 75%?
Plus tip, yeah.
Wow. That's a pretty decent and how much does Uber get? Do you know?
I'm assuming it's comparable, else they wouldn't drive. You know, a lot of these guys drive both. There's an app on, I guess, some Android phones where you can drive both and put your phone on, and then Lyft calls you or Uber calls you or whatever else.
Yeah. Well, tell us what's going on with the IPO.
When do you think Amazon will take over Lyft or Uber? That's what my question is.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, but that's probably inevitable, I'm sure. I'm sure it's
absolutely
inevitable.
So Lyft beats Uber to IPO as ride-hailing rivalry really heats up. The Uber versus Lyft war has never been hotter. Now Lyft has beaten Uber to the S1 punch, filing its IPO papers this past Friday. I'm assuming, you know, Uber will obviously file suit soon. But really, really interesting. Lyft is much, much smaller than Uber. It only operates in the U.S. and Canada. But its role in the ride-sharing ecosystem is hugely, hugely important. Lyft has managed to grow its market share by 39%, which makes it, you know, really enough for riders to get easily and regular companies out there and price quotes between Uber and Lyft here to see which one's cheaper. So if you're going out into town, you want to see which one's cheaper, and then you pick one. So it's interesting.
You know, we just had a social media guru on last week who wrote a book called New Power. And he said the social climate for Lyft surpasses Uber. They are so forward-thinking. They are recreating. They're cutting edge. He went on and on about how different they are, and in a good way. So,
you know what, as a public relations guy, I think both of their brands are fantastic and phenomenal. They're doing a great job getting out
there. So let me ask you a question. I'm leaving at 5 in the morning on Wednesday to go to California for my big trade show.
Excellent.
I have always taken Uber. Would you start, and they've always been there for me every single time. Would you start by going and giving Lyft a try on Wednesday morning, or would you stick with your try and true, knowing that they're always there with Uber?
You know what? If they're always there and they make you happy, go for it. You know, that's what I say.
I want to try Lyft.
Right.
You know, my friend
told me. You know what? A lot of the drivers are the same, so.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I want to try it, though, on my way to the airport when I have a 6:30 flight, you know?
I would say, you know, try both, and whoever's closer with a better rate, go for it, because they're both very, you know, very responsible companies.
Okay, I will do that. I will try. I'll let you know what happens. I will let you know what happens.
Great. I want to call from the car, please. Thank you.
I won't be calling anyone because no one's going to be up at that hour. Are you kidding me? Hey, listen, we have
point.
A lot more stories to cover with Mark Goldman from GoldmanMcCormick.com. And they are a bi-coastal PR firm, and they really do an awesome job. I have to say, I love working with them and have for a very long time. They do a fabulous job. And we're going to be back with more hot stories. One that I think is so interesting regarding Old Navy and a model that we might see more of or maybe not. I don't know. We'll ask Mark what that story is all about when we come back. I'm Frankie Boyer. He's Mark McCormick. This is Biz Talk Radio. Stay tuned. Make a stash. New car caviar for Saturday dreams. Think of a new leopard ball tune.
Now you can watch business videos on demand. Go to bizvod.com for details. That's BIZVOD.com.
And welcome back. It is Frankie Boyer, Biz Talk Radio, and Mark McCormick. Mark Goldman from... That is so funny, Mark. I'm so funny. That's so funny. I'm sorry. Mark Goldman, partner at Goldman McCormick, is with us, and we're talking. We love to do these business stories, and we call them the Biz Roundup. But this one is a very big story because I think it's very telling. Gap announced on Thursday that it plans to split into two companies. And tell us, this is so bizarre. What are they doing? And why do you think Old Navy has become such a huge phenomenon all of a sudden?
You know what? Old Navy, first of all, is super trendy. It's nice. It's good clothing. It's kind of what the Gap used to be back in the day. And always a good price, always good sales for the whole family. It's wonderful. So Gap, as you mentioned, on Thursday announced plans to split into two companies and shutter 230 retail stores in a makeover that showcases its hot Old Navy chain and really kind of de-emphasizes its slumping namesake brand, Gap, which is, you know, kind of sad, shares surged around 25% in aftermarket trading following the announcement of the division of Old Navy and the unnamed new company, which will comprise of Gap, Banana Republic, and other, you know, some of the other company brands. Really, really kind of interesting. I mean, Old Navy is here to stay, and Gap that you see in every mall and that you shopped at, either for Gap Baby or yourself or a great sweatshirt or preppy look, really going out of business for the most part.
It's so, I mean, Victoria's Secret's closing. Gap
you know
is closing.
I finally stopped crying about that one.
But the truth is that people want more bang for their buck. They want that.
Right.
They want that. And you're absolutely right. We were in Old Navy right around Christmas time with a friend, and they always have these really fun, comfy socks, like the day before Christmas or the day after or something. I forget when we go in, or Black Friday.
Right,
maybe it's Black Friday. And they're like a buck a piece, normally $5. Even at $5, it's still a good deal. And my friend got gloves, and she got this. And, you know, these little things that she still has them. I mean, the quality of them, you're right. I mean, at one point, Gap, if you got something from Gap, that was their problem. It never wore out. I mean, I had Gap shirts for 10 years.
It was also kind of expensive.
Yeah, but they lasted forever.
Right.
And so now, and I don't know, the Banana Republic store in our neighborhood, every minute it's 40% off, 50% off.
You know what? And when's the last, I can't remember the last time I was in Banana Republic. I can't tell you that they still existed, if you ask me.
Yeah, so it's so interesting how they're not getting the customers, they're not getting the traffic, even in the malls and even in the brick and mortar. So it's so fascinating how this is evolving, the story. And this is a bigger story. I think this is very telling, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. But you know what? I do look forward to the new store, a combination of Banana Republic and Gap and Old Navy and all their other brands. Should be kind of interesting. So hopefully, you know, they'll
take
the retail
call
space
it?
From the Gap and create some of these new stores.
What are they going to call it? It's going to be called New Company, New CO?
Well, no, it's an unnamed new company sort of thing. They haven't named it as of yet.
Oh, they haven't named it yet. But the new name, the unnamed new company, I see it's the unnamed new company.
Right.
Okay, so they're pursuing, and they say that that's the way that they're going to be able to survive. Interesting. Fascinating.
Maybe they'll call it, any suggestions? Maybe like the Gap Republic or something. Who knows?
Yeah, could be. Who knows? Who knows? But boy, the real estate, can you imagine other brick and mortars now wanting, I mean, there's got to be a Gap, an Old Navy,
right.
a Banana Republic, a Victoria's Secret, and what are some of their other brands? Is that it?
Yeah, you know what? I'm not sure offhand, to be honest with you, but you just named about four or five stores that are all closing up, and a lot of these bigger, you know, strip malls and malls are going to be seeing a lot less money this year and for years to come.
Absolutely. Okay.
Who knows what will happen to America's Mall?
I don't know, but I am loving this story about a black church. You've got to share with us what's going on, because this is such a fabulous story, Mark Oldman.
Yeah, so you know what? I actually read this in the Post. I've read this in a lot of different places. So this black church hosted a cannabis summit to address business opportunities in the legal marijuana industry. This happened at a church in Brooklyn, New York, last week. The summit attracted almost 1,000 attendees who heard from industry leaders, you know, in the medical, business, and social justice sectors working on the cannabis industry.
I think that's it's a great story, because the black communities in New York have been trying to figure out how to get more, make it more inclusive and have more people have an opportunity. And you know, when you go to the cannabis conferences, quite honestly, diversification is missing. Big time.
Absolutely, 100%. I agree with you. And you know what? Our governor, the New York governor, Andrew Cuomo, is pushing for legalization of recreational marijuana. He's finally doing something right, this guy, for the over the age of 21 by the end of 2019. So an industry event like this for the diverse community is a wonderful thing.
And it's called Canaclusive. And I'm going to interview them for the cannabis show, because I think it's a great story.
Well,
now,
you know what? Canaclusive is actually the organization who advocates for diversity and inclusion in the marijuana industry. So
I think it's
super exciting.
You know, it's very exciting. You know, we had Women Grow trying to get more women into the field. You know, last night, 60 Minutes talked about the lack of diversity in the computer field, and also in coding for your young girls. And if you have young women out there, teach them how to code. It is a lucrative, phenomenal opportunity right now. But so is the cannabis industry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just getting bigger and bigger. And that's why, you know, every Friday I look forward to your show about cannabis, A to Z, all that business news.
Now, do you think that some of the congregants were upset about this church, this Baptist church in Brooklyn doing this?
You know what? Nobody's ever going to be 100% happy or not happy. There's both sides to the story and both sides to, you know, these social stories and stuff. So, yeah, I'm sure people are upset, just like Amazon. People are upset. Some people were, some people weren't, you know. So, whatever. You got to move on, get over it, and, you know, introduce more business in New York.
Absolutely. Hey, tell us about Wells Fargo. What's going on with them real quick before we're out of time?
Wells Fargo. Unbelievable, isn't it? So Wells Fargo is in a record $240 million settlement over the fake accounts. You might remember last year, Wells Fargo officials, they've reached a record $240 million settlement with U.S. shareholders over the creation by bank employees of a million unauthorized customer accounts. So the settlement disclosed was last week required insurers for 20 current and former Wells Fargo executives and directors, including the chief executive Tim Sloan and his predecessor, to pay $240 million to the bank. This is great for consumers. It's great for this country.
And you're great for all of us, and we're out of time. Thank you so much, Mark Oldman. GoldmanMcCormick.com, and we'll be back in a moment. Frankie Boyer, stay tuned. Biz Talk Radio, BizTalkRadio.com.
Biz Talk Radio is powered by Freedom Solar. Find out more at freedomsolar.com. Biz Talk Radio.
Strumming my pain with his finger.
And welcome back. It's Frankie Boyer. And we owe a tremendous amount of gratitude to our next guest, Mark Kingston Levin, Dr. Mark Kingston Levin. He has always been curious, but his strong interest in science is reflected in the choice of undergraduate studies in chemistry and physics. And he worked on both the Apollo and Mars space missions. He was part of the president's science advisory team. And he also applied his scientific background to business, and over the years, he founded two companies which were awarded over 32 U.S. patents, and the most successful commercially was a sensor detecting carbon monoxide machine that was widely sold. He also devised an instrument to detect submarines under the ice and a sensor that helped NASA determine where water might exist on Mars. Can you imagine all of that? Brilliant, brilliant mind. And he finally retired. And instead of looking at the land and retiring, you got into writing, Doctor. Welcome back. Always so wonderful.
Well, thank you for having me.
So let's talk about your new book. You started out with 30th Century. And tell us, the first book was 30th Century Escape. It took best science fiction book of the year. And then the second book was called 30th Century Revived.
Yep, that was it.
And that was it. And now the third book is getting ready to be scheduled out, and it's called 30th Century Contact. So yes, tell us a little bit about the 30th Century trilogy, please.
Okay, well, this is really a kind of a long story, but it's a life of Jennifer. But we start off Escape with a point where she has become leader of the secret society of scientists, which, by the way, is a nonviolent organization, but they refer to it as SS, which is, of course, to shock people a little bit. Because there are very few nonviolent organizations. We have a space force now, but we don't have a peace force. We do have, you know, something to do with peace, but it's really just for people who don't want to serve in the military. They can go and do projects, irrigation projects, and those types of things in small villages. But we really need more nonviolent heroes, so that our children will think nonviolence is a good thing, and they can develop that way. And I think it was very important for me when I was a teenager. I was kind of pretty rowdy, and I got into fights until one day my coach told me if I ever hit another person, if he ever saw me hit another person, he would kick me off the team. So I love football. So I learned to control that. But I finally read, I think I was 14 or 15, I read this story by, what was his name? As Isaac Asimov, The Federation. And he has a great character in there, Salvor Hardin, who did everything peacefully and was an amazing person from the nonviolent point of view. He always found a nonviolent way to win. And I think that was something good for me, because I saw another way. Before that, it was kind of all entertainment was violent, very violent. There were a few things that, that were not, but they were very few. I think Hummingbird, the To Kill a Hummingbird, well, there weren't any hummingbirds in it, but I think it was a Mockingbird, To Kill a Mockingbird, yeah.
Yeah.
And this guy was nonviolent, and he was very good, I thought. Played by Gregory Peck, but
right, of course,
was,
yeah,
was amazing.
And it's now on Broadway. Did you know that it's having a revival in Broadway? Yes, doing extremely well.
Yeah, it's doing well, and it was a great story. So, but there are a few, there are great authors out there who can write nonviolent, but you know we don't make movies of them very much. So this is a very good thing. I think that's why I brought it up, that we need more of this. I want more authors. I want to challenge all the authors that are listening to try to write at least one of their books with a nonviolent heroine or a nonviolent protagonist, so that, you know, whether it's male or female, doesn't matter. It just, we need heroes, and we need those who really give kids the right picture, that, you know, in most cases, people like Elon Musk didn't get to be where he is through violence. But somehow we, for some reason, Al Capone was somewhat of a hero, you know, in the old days.
Yeah.
And it was the wrong way. I think we needed to make the people who took him down more heroes,
So now that all three of the books, now that you've got all three of them under you,
yes.
Are you excited? Are you pleased? Are you now the new book being written? What's going on now?
Well, I'm doing a project with a friend of mine who's going to be retiring as a professor. And we're going to work on, there's a very strange experiment that defines quantum mechanics. It's called the two-slit experiment. You can put electrons or photons down, and they will go through those two slits, and they will make a wave pattern from interference. So people say, oh, well, this is definitely a wave. There's a lot of debate whether it's a wave or a particle. Back in the 1920s and 30s. Now we know it's both. That's what quantum mechanics really told us. It was developed by Dirac and Schrodinger and Max Born and dozens of other scientists who were involved. But Dirac and Schrodinger got the Nobel Prize. Just like there was an awful lot of scientists involved in developing and understanding what DNA was. In fact, in my opinion, Schrodinger wrote the Book of Life, which said there would be a chemical with these types of compounds. He didn't figure out the structure, okay? But he did figure out that the next big thing was to go after the structure. So that's one of the greatest, I would say, X-ray diffraction opportunities in the world. And there was a lady who did this, and her name was Rosalind Franklin, and she's recently been honored, but she died at like 37 or 38, and it was so they don't give Nobel Prizes to the people who die,
only
to the people who live. So anyway, there are two guys who finally figured it out, and there was a lot of people who had it wrong, like Linus Pauling. He had it wrong. But in reality, we didn't honor the right people necessarily because people die. Well, I think she should have been one of the people. Usually you can have three people in the Nobel Prize.
Right.
But in terms of my book, I started book four. I need to get that out, but I didn't want to disrupt the flow, because I'm still very much for the nonviolence, and I want to promote other authors to write nonviolent, because all of this what we call mass killings in the schools upset me to such an extent that I wanted to do something. And that was probably my biggest motivation for writing this trilogy. Initially, I didn't figure on writing book four or five, but I thought just a trilogy. And it was kind of to my daughter was young and in school. When I retired, I was it was 2014, and I had two types of leukemia and lymphoma. Waldenstrom's from similar type of lymphoma. They're all fatal, but I beat them. I just got lucky.
And we're so grateful to you. Can you imagine all the lives you've saved with the technology you've created? It's just extraordinary. How can people find out more about your work, Doctor? What's the best website for the books?
Well, I have a website called markkingstonlevin.com.
Wonderful. markkingstonlevin.com. And we will be back in a moment. More to be continued down the road with our wonderful PhD.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for business talk. Online at biztalkradio.com.
Welcome back. It is Frankie Boyer, and this is Biz Talk Radio, biztalkradio.com. Joining us now is the author of the greatest untold story of the Civil War. Paul Stack is here. And Paul, welcome to the program. You've spent over 40 years practicing law in Chicago, and you've served on Mayor Harold Washington's advisory committee on the design and construction of Chicago's new Central Library, now the Harold Washington Library Center. And it is such a pleasure to have you with us today. And what was it about the Civil War that got you in this one particularly fascinating story, which I never heard of before your book?
Well, it's a purchase that I made on the internet. Literally by accident, I just came across it. It's a shell, it's a seashell, and it's carved. I bought it from a dealer in Australia. And the lowest level of the shell, it's shaped like a cone. The lowest level of the shell is a profile of a ship, the Great Eastern. Right above it is a picture of a gate with a tree, and it's identified on the shell as the tomb of Abraham Lincoln. And then above the two of those symbols is a picture of crossed feathers or crossed wings. So the shell is obviously very old. It probably was carved about 1866, 1867, because it's the first temporary tomb that Lincoln was placed in.
Yeah.
But I could think of no connection between the Great Eastern, which is this giant iron ship out of England, and the death of Abraham Lincoln, or Abraham Lincoln at all.
Right.
So I just started poking around and searching, trying to find out what I could. And the result of which, over 15 years of research and researching in New
York. When did you get the shell? When did you get the shell?
I got it in 2001.
Okay.
It was actually, I remember that very well because it was actually mailed to me from Australia September 11th, 2001. And I didn't get it until October. I'd almost forgotten about it at the time it arrived.
Wow.
You can actually see the shell. I have pictures of it on my website for the book. It's September1861.com. But in the course of doing the research, I learned that the ship, which was an engineering marvel, it was just gigantic. Even by today's standards, it's huge. But it was a commercial failure. And in September of 1861, this ship left under very mysterious circumstances, which I argue and I think can actually support. It was heading toward the United States. It was going to break the blockade. The book is called Leviathan, and that was the name of the ship at the time it was launched. Leviathan is a sea monster in the book of Job. It later became known as the Great Eastern. This ship is so large, Frankie, that if it were in existence today, it would be the largest ship of the United States Navy, except for our aircraft carriers. and it was launched in 1858. It was a massive iron double-hulled ship. It had paddle wheels at either side that were six stories tall. It had a 24-foot propeller. Its dimensions today are still shocking. And when you think that it was built prior to welding or electricity, it was built basically with human power and steam power. It's a quite a remarkable story. I didn't know that much about the ship, frankly. And it was only when I saw the shell, I had read a popular book about the Great Eastern, which never mentioned any of this. But when I read a popular book about it, I said, I'd like to know more about it. And it was just really astounded at what I found.
How? I mean, so when did you finally write the book?
It took me years to write it. And the way I wrote it, Frankie, is I'm a former prosecutor, federal prosecutor. And the way you work in investigations of conspiracies was you start finding every piece of paper you can, and you start putting it in a chronology. And then you start seeing what dots are connected. In this case, I have a chronology that's 1,000 pages long, and it's on the website. It's for free. For any historian that wants to use it, go to September1861.com, and you can download the entire chronology. And many of those documents have never been seen before. And I got started on it. I really did not intend to write a book initially, to tell you the truth. I was just doing it out of my own curiosity, like, what is this all about? But in the course of it, I thought, well, I've got this much time and this much effort invested in it. I might as well get the story out. So I then took up the book and worked on it well over a decade.
Oh, my gosh.
And it really, to a certain extent, it sounds odd, but I never had an outline. Every time I finished a chapter of the book, I went back to the chronology, to the documents, and said, then what happened? And let them tell me.
So the
story is really not my story. It's a story that basically I excavated from all of these documents. And I tried to do the best I could to tell it. And,
well, you've done an incredible job of it, boy. And
Is it
fair to say that this shell has changed your life in many ways now?
Oh, absolutely, without any question. And I got involved because it had to do with the beginning of the war. One of the characters in the book, this is the one fictional character, but I believe this is accurate, was a fugitive slave. And I said, okay, if I'm going to describe this person, I better learn something about slavery. And so I went back and I obtained a number of books that had been written by slaves after the Civil War and where they described their lives. And I tried to create the backstory for my character consistent with those stories. And it's really an amazing story. I really had no real concept of slavery other than Uncle Tom's Cabin and watching Roots many years ago and so forth. And it's a story that is just stunning when you get into it. Also, in the book, this is the beginning of the war, September of 1861. You see.
Oh, hey, Paul, we're out of time, but I want you back again because this is such a riveting, I mean, such an important story as well. Give us the website. Give us all the information of how people can find out more about your work.
www.September1861.com.
Okay.
It's a free website. There's no login. Help yourself. Lots
Wonderful.
Of pictures. Some of the pictures of the ship
are extraordinary.
Are awesome.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Come back again, all right?
Thank you very much, Frankie. I'd love to.
Yes, and we'd love to hear more about this story because it's so intriguing how a shell changed the history and a story that was never told of the Civil War. Crazy, isn't it? And we will be back next time. This has been another edition of the Frankie Boyer Show for BizTalk Radio. Thanks for listening. Make it a great day. And as always,
smile, though your heart is aching. Smile, even though it's breaking.